Hey, parents, if your teenager won't stop complaining about waking up early for school, you might want to consider moving to California. California recently became the first state to mandate later start times for most middle and high schools. By the beginning of the 2022 school year, public middle schools will begin classes at 8 a.m. or later, and high schools will not start earlier than 8:30. The move could be a significant one for students in the state. Research shows that extra sleep for adolescent students can actually benefit their academic performance and their physical health. So I talked to Judy Owens, the director of sleep medicine at Boston Children's Hospital and a professor of neurology at Harvard Medical School, and she told me exactly how much sleep teenagers need and how much they're actually getting.
In terms of the recommendations, and these are from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine in 2016, teenagers, which include middle and high school students, should be getting between 8.5 and 10 hours of sleep. But we know that the vast majority of tweens and teens are not getting nearly that much sleep. And in fact, some of them may actually be getting closer to 5 or 6 hours of sleep.
And do we know why that is? I mean, is it that adolescents have different sleep cycles than adults do or than younger kids?
So what happens at around the time of pubertal onset, there is a natural normal shift in circadian rhythms. That's essentially our brain's time clock, which determines, among other things, when we fall asleep and when we wake up. Most teenagers cannot fall asleep much before 11 o'clock at night. And if they're getting the sufficient amount of sleep that they need, that means they're programmed to wake up at around 8 o'clock in the morning. So a move to 8:30 represents a very significant increased sleep opportunity. And it's not only more sleep that these students will get, but the timing of their sleep will be more appropriate to their circadian rhythms. And that may be equally, if not more important than how much sleep they get, it's when they sleep as well.
So most kids, I'm going to, as we just said, are not getting that. And what effect does that have on students in school?
Well, we certainly know that insufficient sleep is linked to poor academic performance, lower performance on standardized tests, and also other issues related to school success, like being more likely to be tardy, more likely to be absent, and even less likely to graduate from high school. But this goes far beyond improvements in academic performance. We know that insufficient and mistimed sleep has profound effects on health and safety. So, for example, students who do not get enough sleep are more likely to be depressed and more likely to express suicidal thoughts. And, you know, of course, suicide, unfortunately, is the third highest cause of death among adolescents. We also know that motor vehicle accidents are increased when students don't get enough sleep. And accidental injuries are the number one cause of mortality among adolescents in the U.S. So this has profound implications for very important public health issues in adolescents.
Is there any indication that this is also or should start happening for students who are younger, say elementary school students? Is the idea ultimately just to get all students on the same late start? Would that make sense for younger students as well?
Now, in terms of younger children, in contrast to adolescents, they are much more likely to be what we call morning larks, or to have a tendency to go to bed earlier and wake up earlier. It makes much more sense for the younger children to be going to school earlier than it is to have the high school students have that early start time.
Judith Owens is the director of sleep medicine at Boston Children's Hospital, a professor of neurology at Harvard Medical School, and was the lead author of the 2014 American Academy of Pediatrics Policy Statement on Later School Start Times. Judy, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Kyla Wahlstrom is a senior research fellow at the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota. Kyla, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
So I'm not a teenager, but I'm up early and I'm pretty tired. What are the average school start times throughout the country right now?
The average starting time in about 87% of all high schools in the U.S. is earlier than 8:30. So that means that we have teens that are getting up very early, before 7 often, or 6:30, 6 o'clock, if the schools are starting at 7, 7:15. It's an early time for them.
And how many districts around the country, or, you know, if you can give us an estimate of percentages of school districts around the country that are starting to change to later start times around 8 or 8:30?
It's interesting because this has been going on actually for 23 years. And I would say that after the first initial start time changes happened in Edina, Minnesota, which is a suburb of Minneapolis, and then the Minneapolis Public Schools made their time change in 1997, I'm just guesstimating, but I would guess there's more than 1,000 school districts across the country that have made that change independently after having the research brought to their attention.
We've interviewed someone who was part of a 2014 study on this and was touting sort of the benefits to young people for having later school start times. But what about parents? I mean, this is something that parents obviously have to adjust to. Have you heard anything from them as far as how they are dealing with the later school start times?
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting, for all the research that I've done over 23 years, we've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of parents in focus groups, individual interviews, and so on. And parents are saying that, first off, they're very concerned about their child having to be up so early and that they struggle to get the kids out of bed. So with the later starting time, there's been a real remarkable change for how parents are seeing their children and their ability to get them up in the morning. And as a result, 92% of the parents that I've interviewed or surveyed have said their kids are easier to live with. Now, that said, this kind of change that California is going to embark on is really going to challenge parents' schedules, their work schedules, home life schedules, and so on. But over the years, as we have investigated this, we have found families have really made the adjustments quite well. But it takes about a year for everything, all of the school schedules, the holidays, the work schedules, vacations, and so on, have to be adjusted.
Now, what type of families are we talking about here? I mean, are low-income families affected differently than other families are when it comes to making those types of adjustments, whether it's the daycare or just general family structure?
Yes, actually, there is some difference among the family constellations and the family economic situations. One of the things that has been really important, actually, in the findings that we have seen over the years is that in low-income areas where there are not, say, two parents in the family or there's not a car, if the student were to miss the bus or to sleep through their alarm, there's been no way for the parents to get the child to school. So actually, low-income families have found, and low-income students, we have found that there's better attendance because these students are not struggling to get out of bed and missing the first hour or even the whole day of school.
Now, in terms of California, which is the latest state to put this into place, what hurdles will they face when it comes to real-life practical implementation on the state level?
Well, on the state level, it's going to be interesting to see what the state does to assist and enable school districts to make this change. There's going to be a wide variety of solutions that the school districts are going to begin to think about. And over the years, as I've looked at this, there's been a need to look at adjusting bus schedules and adjusting when childcare is available in the school district before and after school. Whether or not the child care is available on a free and reduced sliding fee scale. And there'll be other adjustments that the state will have to look at, because the thing that's nice about the California change is that all of the districts are going to be on the same wavelength, if you will, by 2022. One of the problems that we have found over the years is as athletic schedules and other issues that have to do with sports and clubs and things that kids do after school, when the districts are not in sync for when their starting and ending times are, they have a difficulty staying within the sports schedules and the club schedules. And this will allow all of the districts across the state to have some similarity in terms of when they dismiss their students.
Kyla, do you expect more states to follow California? Are there any pockets of, shall we say, resistance to this that you've noticed?
Regarding the first question, I do believe that other states will take courage by making this change to go forward. This is a very controversial decision in some localities, and it's because people don't like change, and there's a rhythm to a community when the buses come and go, when the kids go off to school, if it's elementary, middle school, or high school, and when the parents go to work or drop their kids off. This will create some stress, certainly, on the part of the regularities of the community. Now, California is leading the way, and this may give courage to some districts and states to make this change and be similar to what California is doing. That said, I am well aware of many districts that have had this discussion, and if the school board is polarized and doesn't agree with the idea, then there often has been even a superintendent losing his or her job as a result of supporting or initiating this kind of change.
Kyla Wahlstrom is a senior research fellow at the College of Education and Human Development at the University of Minnesota. Kyla, thank you.
You're most welcome.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.